Hi, and welcome to In Conversation With, a podcast from The Lancet Neurology. It's October 2021, and I'm your host, Jack Williamson. Because of their supposed capability of regenerating diseased tissues, stem cell-based therapies are often advertised to the public as the panacea for every disease with a degenerative component. However, scientific evidence for stem cell-based therapies in neurodegenerative disease is scarce. Businesses marketing putative stem cell interventions have sprung up across the world on the basis of unproven or controversial studies, driven by the important emotional burden on people living with diseases such as multiple sclerosis. These commercial activities result in serious concerns from ethical, scientific, legal, regulatory, and policy standpoints, warranting the need for large, randomized controlled trials for stem cell-based therapies in neurodegenerative disease now more than ever. Today, I'm joined by Professor Antonio Uccelli from IRCCS Ospedale Policlinico San Martino, whose article on mesenchymal stem cells in multiple sclerosis is published in our November issue. Hi, Antonio. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Jack. Thanks for asking me to be with you today.
Could you start by giving us some background to the approach you used in your study? What was the rationale for using mesenchymal stem cells in multiple sclerosis?
Well, in the early 2000s, a few people published the possibility that cells from the stroma of the bone marrow that at that time were called mesenchymal stem cells could eventually differentiate into neural cells. And actually, this was something that gained a lot of interest because I remember some of the top journals claim that you can turn blood into brain. Indeed, we were, since the very beginning, very much interested about the possibility that stromal cells from the bone marrow, and since now we would call it mesenchymal stem cells, could indeed interact with cells of the immune system, particularly lymphocytes, but also other type of cells, and somehow modulate many of their effector functions. Since that time, we and others produced a lot of data confirming that more than differentiation into neural cells, these cells, mesenchymal stem cells, can modulate many immune functions and at the same time provide protective functions or neuroprotecting functions and somehow even foster tissue repair in experimental models of multiple sclerosis mainly, but also in other neurodegenerative diseases. And again, I'm talking about experimental models. So that was the rationale. At that time, I thought, I and other friends and colleagues thought that it could have been ideal to use mesenchymal stem cells that on one side can stop inflammatory cues or inflammatory danger signals against the central nervous system, and at the same time, favor tissue repair. That was the rationale.
Okay, thank you. Although the approach was shown to be safe, unfortunately, the clinical endpoint of your study was not met. Do you have any explanations as to why the approach didn't work using your study?
Well, indeed, as you said, this was a long effort. We started discussing based on the preclinical data we had in the late, around 2008, 2009, and we designed the clinical trial and published it in 2010, and the design. And then we started enrolling patients in 2012. Unfortunately, as you said, the study that we now have published in The Lancet Neurology showed that the infusion of the intravenous infusion of mesenchymal stem cells do not stop inflammation measured by MRI metrics, and at the same time does not also provide any evidence of an effect on clinical items such as annualized relapse rate or the worsening of disability. So these clinical metrics were not affected by the administration. Although, as you said, the treatment was safe. There was no difference between patients treated with mesenchymal stem cells and patients treated with placebo. Now, the question is why this happened. Of course, there are different possibilities. One is that mesenchymal stem cells do not have an intrinsic potency to play a role in multiple sclerosis. This is a possibility. I hope and I think this is not the case because, as I said, the preclinical data were extremely strong. Now, there are several reasons I believe that could justify this. First of all, the relative heterogeneity of the patients that were included in the study. So there were patients with relapsing remitting, but also patients in the progressive phase, although there was a unifying feature for these patients, which is active patients. However, the underlying biology in relapsing remitting multiple sclerosis is completely different than for progressive MS. And therefore, this is one possibility. Another possibility is that one shot is not enough. One of the major clinical trials published in The Lancet several years ago in graft versus host disease demonstrated that the intravenous injections of mesenchymal stem cells is effective as long as you administer more than one time those cells. So it could be that you need to have multiple injections. Another possibility is that mesenchymal stem cells from patients with multiple sclerosis are maybe defective. It has been claimed by some people that this could be the case compared to MSCs from healthy donors. And in this case, this raised the opportunity to treat patients with allogeneic instead of autologous MSCs. Another possibility, which has been raised in an interesting paper on cell stem cells a couple of years ago, is that we should probably use fresh stem cells. Jacques Galipeau claims that MSCs are like fish. Fresh is better than thawed. And this could be a possibility. However, for technical reasons, it is impossible to, extract the cells, grow them, and then do a randomized study. So this is the reason because we had to work that way.
Ethical concerns have also been raised about the use of stem cell-based therapies in neurodegenerative diseases. Could you please elaborate on what some of these ethical concerns are and what you think about them?
You know, when we're talking about stem cells, we are clearly talking about different type of stem cells. And so ethical issues are relevant when you are talking about embryonic, it are relevant when we are talking about, or potentially relevant when we are talking about allogeneic situations. In this case, we were talking about autologous MSCs isolated from the patient's own bone marrow. Next, mesenchymal stem cells can be isolated quite easily from different sources. Basically, they can be isolated from almost any connective tissue. So the most used ones are those from the bone marrow, but it is quite appealing to isolate them from the fat, from the adipose tissues, or you can even generate it from the placenta or from the umbilical cord. And however, you need to separate the fact that those are not hematopoietic stem cells. So I have to say that in my opinion, and I would say that there is quite a consensus about it, MSCs do not really raise, MSCs means mesenchymal stem cells do not really raise ethical issues. I would say that the major ethical issue about this is not about this type of stem cells, but about their use. Because of the clinical trials have been conducted so far, the data suggesting their effectiveness are overall limited. Unfortunately, our study was completely negative. There is another paper from Dimitri Karusis that was recently published in Lancet, in Brain, and it's on a smaller number of individuals and only from one center, is a very nice paper with a very peculiar, statistical design. So I would say that the ethical issue about mesenchymal stem cells arises from the possibility of for people to go and get in profit organization. So there is a lot of concerns about medical tourism of people that go with the neurodegenerative diseases, including multiple sclerosis, seeking for treatment with mesenchymal stem cells. And at this stage, I would say that the evidence we have of their effectiveness are limited or in our hands, unfortunately, because I wish I would have had different results, but unfortunately, it's not the case.
Going back to your study was done in 15 sites in 9 different countries, which is a remarkable feat. Congratulations. Can you please tell us about your experiences of designing and conducting a multinational clinical trial? So what were some of the successes and challenges, and which overall lessons arose from doing your study?
Well, Jack, I think this is, I'm glad that you asked me this, because although this doesn't really have anything to do with the specific focus of our study, somehow we believe paved the road how to conduct difficult studies in academic institution. In other words, we clearly appreciated since the very beginning that it would have been extremely difficult to get enough money because we don't have industries behind us. Basically, we had to go looking for money from patients organizations or non-profit funding bodies. And of course, it's obvious that when you're talking about such a multinational study, because it's difficult to recruit this type of patients that are willing to do this kind of intervention, you need to have many different sites, and as I said, you don't have an industry behind, you don't have a big pharma that can give you a number of millions. So what did we do? We designed identical studies that we submitted to our own national funding agencies. And so somehow each of us went to his own funding body saying, please fund only our own study. Then we had some other agencies that somehow helped us for the centralized activities. And therefore all the data that were collected were then put in a unique repository using identical strategies for the collection and for the analysis. So all the MRI data were collected in a specific and well-established center in Switzerland, which is a pivotal place that do MRI analysis for clinical studies in neurological diseases. The clinical and all the other type of data were collected in Genova, and the statistical analysis was done all together in a way that we could take the whole bunch of data together. So separate studies funded by different entities, but they were collected and analyzed and in a unique way through ECRF, electronic CRF, that were unique to each site and to a completely identical approach of analysis. So this circumvents the problem of getting funds. It was clearly also an issue because the study lasted a lot. And this was due in part to the fact that while in certain places like UK, Italy, And Denmark, the study was immediately approved, and so we were able to start right away. But we didn't have the enough power and enough money to do all the patients. Then we had to wait for other centers, particularly, for example, Canada. It was the other co-PI because Mark Friedman was the co-PI and helped me a lot in each and every moment of the trial. But unfortunately, it was approved much, much later. It got the money from the Canadian MS Society much, much later, and we had to kind of wait for them. However, I think that altogether we collected several millions of dollars or euros, depending on how you want to see it, and this would have not been possible without this type of approach.
And you mentioned some lessons there. Finally, what does the future hold for this field, and any final comments on your study?
Well, as I said, I think that there are some explanations why it didn't work in our hands. And there are also other studies that provided, although in very small groups, some evidence that they might work. So I think there is still a hope. What I truly believe is that we need to design a study at this stage on patients with progressive MS, now focusing our attention in on the possibility of for these cells to induce tissue healing and eventually tissue protection. And this could be most likely achieved in patients with the progressive MS, although in the early phase, of the progressive, in the early steps of the progressive phase. Of course, one of the major issues about this possibility is fundings because you know, if you want to, one of the reasons because we selected patients with relapsing remitting MS was that MRI was a good, well accepted metrics to be used to evaluate efficacy of treatment. In the case of progression, you need to follow patients for a longer time, and probably have a larger cohort. So to go on that type of patients, which I hope is going to be the future for this type of treatment, I mean, to design a study that will follow patients for a longer amount of time and also with a high number of patients included. And this means, of course, more money needed. But I truly believe that there is still a hope, particularly for patients, of course.
Thank you, Antonio. It was a real pleasure talking with you. Despite the unsuccessful results, it was a really important negative trial, and I hope that many lessons are carried forward as a result of your and your colleagues' work. So thank you for talking with me today.
Thanks for giving me the opportunity to be here today and speak for the audience of Lancet Neurology. Thank you.
You can read Professor Uccelli's research now at thelancet.com. Thank you for joining us today, and remember, you can subscribe to In Conversation with The Lancet Neurology wherever you normally get your podcasts.